The Netherlands minister in London has confirmed me that the British government has promised immediate help. In the meantime, the people of Holland are doing their utmost to live up to the pledge given this morning by Her Majesty the Queen that the government and the nation will do their duty. I was informed that our land and air forces had met the enemy and that several German airplanes had been brought down and that the parachute landings, which you heard reported over the NBC this morning, had been rendered ineffective. It is hardly necessary at present to add anything to this statement. The facts, as reported to you, and the acts of the German government and army speak for themselves, and the American public is intelligent enough to draw its own conclusions. Germany again has outdone itself as a civilized nation and as an exponent of its own Kultur.
You've just heard a statement by the Netherlands Minister to the United States, Dr. Alexander Loudon. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Here's an Associated Press bulletin from London. French, Belgian, and British planes were sighted over Holland this morning, a Reuters British news agency dispatch said, in quoting the Netherlands radio station at Hilversum near Amsterdam. Another bulletin, this one from Brussels. General mobilization was proclaimed in Belgium today to meet the German invasion. And more from Brussels. Parachute troops, said the Brussels radio, dropped from German planes at Nivelles, less than 20 miles directly south of Brussels, and at Saint-Ouen, 40 miles due east. These bulletins were from the Associated Press. For further details, keep tuned to your NBC station. King Leopold today is taking command of the Belgian army, just as his father did 26 years ago to fight the German invasion. The Brussels radio reported that already French and British soldiers are on their way to help. Antwerp was bombed early this morning. And now, a United Press bulletin from Berlin. Well-informed sources said that they had heard reports that German troops already had reached Brussels, Belgium, supposedly by airplane. Keep tuned to your NBC station.
The National Broadcasting Company now takes you to the German capital and the voice of William C. Kirker, its war reporter in that capital.
Hello, NBC. This is William C. Kirker calling from Berlin. At the crack of dawn, German troops march into Holland and Belgium and have taken over the so-called protection of Luxembourg. The war with all its destruction has started. Hitler has struck. Early this morning, foreign correspondents heard Herr von Ribbentrop issue a government proclamation in which the reasons for the super sudden move on part of the Reich is explained. According to the communique, the Reich had certain information leading to the belief that an Allied attack upon its western borders was imminent. Holland and Belgium are accused of having sided with the Allies in preparation for this supposed attack. Dutch and Belgian ministers, the press, and all officials are accused by Nazi Germany to have shown a considerable friendliness towards the Allies by supporting the British Secret Service, by having built stronger fortifications along the borders, fronts bordering on Germany, by having placed the bulk of their troops towards Germany, and in every way having secretly sided with both Britain and France. Such is the picture how Germany sees it. In order to ward off this much purported attack, Germany has marched. No special details can be had at the moment. No military official of the Wilhelmstrasse knows what happened. An absolute and complete surprise to everybody. Tired correspondents this morning were shocked when this sensation was sprung upon them by Herr von Ribbentrop. Not the slightest inkling or sign, only some rumors were circulating which nobody really took serious as all this. In his memorandum to the press, Ribbentrop stated that German troops had marched into Belgium and Holland in order to safeguard their neutrality. He said, quote, "We are not entering as enemies, but to safeguard neutrality," end of quote. As in the case of Norway, both governments are warned not to put up any resistance. However, should resistance be shown, the memorandum states that it will be crushed with all the force of the German army. Charging Holland and Belgium with the full responsibility of their future attitude and the ensuing bloodshed, the Reich in effect endeavors to wash its hands of the results of its military undertakings. At the same time, Luxembourg is being occupied for very much the same reasons of, quote, "protecting her neutrality," end of quote. The Reich has shown its determination at last. The course is set. Coming up to the Rundfunk house here, I saw people standing in front of the radio stores blasting away to tell of this move. Hello, NBC. This is William C. Kirker returning you to the National Broadcasting Company.
William Kirker, NBC war reporter in Berlin, has brought you the reaction in the German capital to the latest war developments. This is the National Broadcasting Company. We now return you to our normal program schedule.
The National Broadcasting Company now brings the voice of its war reporter in the British capital. Go ahead, London.
This is London. The British War Cabinet met at number 10 Downing Street at 8 o'clock this morning, London time. That would be 3 o'clock, your time in New York. Ministers were routed out of bed. Immediately the news of the invasion of Holland and Belgium. Belgium reached London. Immediately after the cabinet meeting, the Ministry of Home Security issued a warning to all British civil defense and anti-aircraft services that they should be on the alert following the events in Holland and Belgium. The carrying of gas masks is once more necessary, and the public should acquaint themselves with the position of shelters and first aid posts. The chiefs of staff of the three services were also summoned and attended the cabinet meeting. The first minister to arrive at Downing Street were Mr. Winston Churchill and Lord Halifax. They were followed by Mr. Oliver Stanley, Minister for War, Sir Samuel Hoare, Minister for Air, Sir John Simon, Sir John Anderson, Sir Kingsley Wood, and Mr. Anthony Eden. Ministers and chiefs of staff looked cheerful as Sir Dudley Pound, the first Sea Lord, entered number 10. He said, "Well, it has started at last." When the cabinet and service chief of staffs had been sitting for half an hour, Air Marshal Pierce, vice chief of the air staff, left Downing Street. A few minutes later, General Sir Edmund Ironside, chief of the Imperial General Staff, drove to the War Office. 5 minutes later, the cabinet meeting ended, having lasted about 35 minutes. Sir Samuel Hoare, the air minister, accompanied by Sir Kingsley Wood, went across the Foreign Office quadrangle, and Viscount Halifax came out 10 minutes later. Hatless, he walked to the Foreign Office and went in by the special ambassador's door. In official quarters, it was stated that appeals for assistance from Holland and the Belgian governments, which had been received, would be answered, of course, with the immediate rendering of all possible help. It is learned in official circles in London that the necessary measures for rendering assistance were at once put into effect by the British government's assistance both to Belgium and to Holland. The Belgian ambassador and the Dutch minister were informed by Lord Halifax early this morning that the countries which had been invaded and had appealed for British help would receive all assistance in our power, said Lord Halifax, adding that we shall stand firmly by the side of the Belgian people and the people of the Netherlands in the struggle so wantonly forced upon them. Those were Lord Halifax's actual words. There is one item of news which was received here about 15 minutes ago. It was broadcast from Germany. That was that Germany, in order to ward off enemy undertakings, had mined all Dutch and Belgian ports and had warned shipping against entering or leaving them. It was earlier announced that flooding measures in Holland had been effectively carried out. It was earlier announced also that 6 German bombers had been shot down. It was announced that some 100 planes had crossed Belgium. There are not details since that time here as to the numbers of planes since then over either Dutch or Belgian territory, nor what planes have been shot down. The timing of the invasion of Belgium and Luxembourg is not yet definitely known. It is confirmed that German troops crossed the Dutch frontier at 3 o'clock. Belgium and Luxembourg timings are not yet known. At 9 o'clock this morning, the Dutch legation in London stated that they were still in communication by telephone with The Hague and with Amsterdam. It is now known that bombs have fallen on Brussels, where several houses have been destroyed. The Belgian embassy learns that Antwerp was bombed by 37 planes and a military hospital destroyed. It is just this minute announced that British and French troops are moving now in response to Belgium's appeal. That announcement comes from Brussels. It was announced earlier this morning, you probably have already had it, that the French airfield at Lyon was bombed this morning. You know that this whole action was preluded by an air attack over the mouth of the Thames this morning. Just 1 minute, please. There is nothing later at this minute before me, and we will be back with you as soon as late news comes in. Return you now to the National Broadcasting Company, New York.
The report just heard was given by NBC's war reporter in London. Here's another Associated Press bulletin on the German invasion of Belgium, Holland, and Luxembourg this morning. The bulletin is from London. The Belgian embassy said it was informed that Antwerp had been bombed by 37 planes and a military hospital destroyed. Another Associated Press bulletin from London quotes a German radio station as saying that mines had been laid outside Netherlands and Belgian forts to safeguard German troop movements. A further report on the bombing of Brussels. London now hears that 400 persons were killed or wounded in the raid, which occurred near the city's airport. And here's a bulletin just in from Washington by International News Service. The bulletin says that the United States government has asked Germany not to bomb open cities during this new invasion. The request came from the State Department following news received in Washington that Brussels in Belgium had been bombed by German planes. We take you now to NBC's newsroom in Washington.
Also, that you wanted a London dateline from the... I came down here to try to get you
Requested the Belgian government, the State Department requested the German Foreign Office to refrain from bombing Brussels because...
It is a, quotes, open city, end quotes, and because there are no troops stationed there. At least so it was announced. Reports to the State Department from various ministers and ambassadors abroad reveal that the airport at Valhaven in Holland, as well as Brussels, have been bombed. The Brussels bombing took place at 5:30 Brussels time. This, well, if you realize it, as you are listening to this report, you are hearing one of the most remarkable examples of war reporting that has ever happened in history. We're used to speed in these days, but do you realize this? This message which I have just given you a few minutes ago came direct by telephone from the American minister abroad. He is in constant connection with the State Department. All evening, earlier in the evening, Ambassador Cudahy in Brussels picked up the telephone receiver while bombs were breaking outside of the city and was talking with men only a few blocks from me in the White House and in the State Department itself, where Secretary Hull and many of his staff were gathered in the State Department and in the White House where the president was listening. Immediately, that news was relayed here to the National Broadcasting Company's newsroom only a few blocks from the White House and the State Department. And now you hear it almost immediately thereafter. All evening, a watch has been kept there, or until about 2 hours ago, both in the White House and the State Department. Reporters, newsmen, and radio men were gathered about in the office of the current information office at the State Department and in the executive offices of the White House. Secretary Hull himself kept watch until late, and in the embassies, in the legations of the beleaguered countries, The representatives there, too, listened to the radio and the press, the only news that they got. But what is more worrying this town, even more perhaps, is the possible result of the seizure of Holland and perhaps some action to be taken in the Far East. You know that only a few days ago, day before yesterday, we learned that the fleet was to remain in the Hawaiian Islands. That was considered merely maneuvers, or officially so, although, of course, everyone had their conjectures. But the president has seemed to guess right in so many of these moves of late, it's almost uncanny. And now, of course, we know that the American fleet is much nearer than it would have been if it had started on its return journey as originally planned. And officials of the state and Navy departments are still maintaining absolute silence on inquiries as to what might happen there. The American fleet, which is gathered in the gathered for maneuvers, remained off Hawaii, and then a rumor came through that it had left Hawaii. We don't know that. You recall earlier the invasion of the threat of the invasions of the Netherlands brought a warning from the Secretary of State that this nation would insist upon preservation of the status quo in the Dutch Indies. Before that, it had been Japan had asserted that her fleet would protect the Netherlands East Indies against any move by another power to seize them. After the State Department made its statement, Japanese spokesmen said they were in full accord with Hull's position and desired only that which we had desired, namely a status quo. Of course, the thing that concerns us about the Netherlands is not merely the position that we have always taken in the Far East, that our interest was to maintain the status quo there, but, as you know, the Dutch East Indies contain some of those essential materials which the War Department has told us we lack, things that we must have in case of war. And by coincidence, only today it was announced that one of the first educational orders had made it possible to begin the smelting of Bolivian tin. Tin is one of the things that comes almost exclusively from the Dutch East Indies. The tin that is mined in Bolivia is a little bit harder to smelt, but it has been the new processes that have been invented have made it practical. And now American business, thanks to an appropriation that went through Congress recently, is able to build new smelters and go to work and start to build up our supplies of tin right here in the Western Hemisphere. As the Bolivian officials point out, tin from Bolivia will always be on tap despite war. It can come up either through the Panama Canal or up the other coast, the West Coast, even if the Panama Canal were closed. It is hardly likely that any official statement will be made concerning the Far East, but we are all here awaiting momentarily another departmental statement from the State Department. Until then, that's all from Washington for the moment, and thanks very much.
We return you now to our regularly scheduled program.